Precisely at a moment when there are any number of debates, what are also introduced are titles in order to signify those who are qualified not only to rule, but also qualified to disagree with each other. Thus, the entry of Rabban Gamliel into the picture tells us a great deal of how Judaism has balanced debate and decision-making throughout its history. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 74, The First Rabbi. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Justice Antonin Scalia, according to several accounts, was very taken with a Talmudic jurisprudential rule that he had learned. This was a declaration by the rabbis that if, in a capital case, the Sanhedrin delivered a unanimous verdict of guilty, then something was considered amiss, for disagreement is often a sign of truly careful decision-making. Scalia referenced this rule while on the bench, and this in turn led to a humorous comment in one article, which noted that, quote, it was as an offhand reference to an ancient court, and Justice Scalia was not announcing a universal principle. Indeed, he almost certainly does not think that every unanimous legislative act is problematic. In 1986, for instance, the Senate approved Justice Scalia's nomination to the Supreme Court by a vote of 98-0, end quote. In the end, Judaism, both in jurisprudence and learning in general, welcomes debate, but it also seeks, at the appropriate time, to move beyond debate, to enshrine laws and judgments that will become normative, a source of unity for adherence to Judaism. This balance is worth keeping in mind as we reflect on the story of the successor of the great humble Hillel. The man who followed Hillel is interesting, not only because he was Hillel's grandson, but also because he was the first Jewish leader to have a rabbinic appellation attached to his name, which in turn allows us to understand so much about the moment in which he lived. Following the passing of Hillel, several major changes occurred within the spiritual leadership of the Sanhedrin. Until this point, the position of leader of the Sanhedrin was given to a variety of different sages. Suddenly, it was the descendants of Hillel who inherited the position, known as Nasi. This was perhaps linked to the greatness and enduring impact of Hillel himself, but it also seems to have been connected to the fact that Hillel was a descendant of David, and the perpetuation of Hillel's line allowed for there to be an enduring link in Jerusalem to David's legacy. The second change undid the Pharisaic approach to leadership of many decades. As we have seen, for some time, religious leadership was conducted by pairs, or in Hebrew, zugot. While one of the two, in a pair, was always first among equals and was always known as the Nasi, the second was second only to the Nasi and was known as Av Beit Din, father of the court. As we further described, the leadership of the Pharisees in Jerusalem through pairs reflected the acknowledgement of human difference and disagreement. This point was made by Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, who comments as follows, quote, the period of the halakhic controversy and disagreement began with the first of the Zugot, a period which actually promoted halakhic research, the elaboration of basic halakhic methodology and epistemology, and particularly free halakhic creativity. Until the time of the Zugot, halakhic scholarship apparently consisted of two components, Kabbalah, acceptance of dicta, and legislation. The creative interpretation, chidush, which is the most typical aspect of the oral law, was introduced by the Zugot. They discovered halakhic dispute, the symposium as the medium of creativity, the controversy as the wellspring of the creative gesture, the dialectical method that finds in the antithesis the nucleus of the synthesis. The reason why the tradition knows these scholars as Zugot is to be found in the novel institution they introduced, end quote. As we have further seen, it was following Hillel and Shammai and the formation of their respective schools that disagreements truly increased among legal religious scholars. Rabbi Soloveitchik further explains that as debates grew more numerous, rabbinic texts began to identify by name more than the spiritual leaders of each generation, but told us the names of many other sages as well. This reflects the fact that we begin to see more individual interpretations taking place in the Mesorah, the transmission of the oral law. As Rabbi Soloveitchik further writes, quote, with the Zugot, the veil of anonymous scholars that until then enveloped the family of scholars began to lift by virtue of individual accomplishment in the field of halakhic research and dialectics. The more the latter developed, the more complicated the disputes became, the more scholars became identified by their names and deeds. The democratization of the Mesorah institution has its origin in the first recorded halakhic controversy, out of which the two schools of Hillel and Shammai developed. End quote. Thus, for much of the Second Temple period, leadership was shared by pairs, zugot, and in the rabbinic text known as Avot, what is often, though inaccurately, called Ethics of the Fathers, we find one aphorism that expresses all this system of the pairs embodied. Yehoshua ben Prachya says, "Aseh lecha rav uknei lecha chaver." Make for yourself a teacher and acquire for yourself a colleague. Make for yourself a teacher. The Hebrew word here is rav, which means spiritual master, teacher, source of authority. That word, rav, is important for our discussion. And so he says, make for yourself a rav, but acquire a colleague as well. This is the era of the pairs, where authority and debate, rulings and comradeship went hand in hand. This can be contrasted with part of the aphorism associated with Hillel's grandson and successor, Gamliel, known as Gamliel HaZaken, Gamliel the Elder. The way in which he is introduced in Avot is important. Rabban Gamliel Omer, Rabban Gamliel said, "Aseh lecha rav v'histalek min hasafek." Make for yourself a rav and avoid doubt. While an earlier sage had said, make for yourself a rav and acquire a colleague, Rabban Gamliel says something similar, but different. Make for yourself a rav and avoid doubt. The opening is the same, but the meaning of the maxim is a direct countervoice. Whereas the earlier leader said, find a source of authority and guidance, but also a colleague, Gamliel makes no mention of a colleague, and instead emphasizes that one should find a teacher and thereby avoid doubt about the proper course of conduct. This reflects the fact, I think, that there was suddenly an abundance of debate, and a focus on finding a source of guidance became even more important. Thus, for many generations in Jerusalem, we find leadership through zugot, pairs, where diverse interpretations resulted, but then, as disagreements increased, we also find that an even more centralized authority was established, linked to one family, the family of Hillel, in order to prevent religious and legal anarchy. It's with this in mind that we can note another phenomenon that with Gamliel first makes itself manifest. Until this point, those who led the Jews spiritually in Jerusalem were known only by their names, Shimon, Yossi, Antigonus, Hillel, Shammai. But in Avot, Gamliel is called Rabban, which means our Rav. This will be a title applied by and large to the Nasi, the leader of the Sanhedrin, and all those considered worthy of sitting on the Sanhedrin, qualifications that we will discuss in a later lecture, will begin to be called Rabbi, my Rav. In this moment of focus on authority, the term Rabbi, or Rabbi, is born. Precisely at a moment when there are any number of debates, what are also introduced are titles in order to signify those who are qualified not only to rule, but also qualified to disagree with each other. Thus, the entry of Rabban Gamliel into the picture tells us a great deal of how Judaism has balanced debate and decision-making throughout its history. There has long been debate and interpretation offered by rabbis in every period. And yet every so often, traditional Jewish communities unite, declare certain approaches normative and others less so. Thus, for example, from Hillel and Shammai onward, debates increased among the Jews, extraordinary debates, and entire schools of thought and law were created. But at the same time, a familial dynasty from Hillel was established, which ultimately reached its most powerful point in Rabbi Judah the Prince, who assembled the Mishnah, a normative code of law. Then interpretations of the Mishnah themselves began, and debates increased once more, ultimately leading to two entire Talmuds whose very vitality is founded on debate. But again, codification resulted because the Babylonian Talmud was ultimately adopted and normative. And through that Talmud, debates were ultimately legally resolved. Then we had a whole new series of debates, diverse interpretations of the Talmud in Ashkenaz and Sepharad. Each community's debates were then resolved and codified in codes in the 16th century. And so it continues to this day. On the one hand, those who study the Torah now always continue to look for new insights and to apply the Torah's eternal rules to new questions. In this respect, the theology of the rabbis presented in Avot is summed up in one of its last maxims, a maxim which has the unique distinction of being quoted by Justice Scalia in a dissent of his. He wrote, quote, "A Talmudic maxim instructs with respect to Scripture, turn it over and turn it over, for all is therein. Divinely inspired texts may contain the answers to all earthly questions," Scalia wrote, "but the due process clause most assuredly does not," end quote. And so yes, when it comes to the Torah, Jews believe, turn it over and turn it over. Keep looking for new insights, for answers to legal questions, and to solutions for historical challenges that present themselves. But as interpretations abounded from generation to generation, traditional Judaism also declared that because laws are what bind its adherents together, Therefore, over time, debates themselves often have to be resolved. This balance between interpretation and decision-making is central to the core of Rabbinic Judaism's vitality. And so at this point in our story, as the Second Temple period begins to come to a close, the appearance of an individual named Rabban signals that Judaism itself will endure. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.